I'm going to talk about globular cluster subpopulations and what we can learn from them about how, and particularly when, galaxies assembled. The work I'm going to be talking about is done in collaboration with a number of people in the SAGES group, who I'll mention explicitly as we go along. There are a number of good reasons for supposing that globular clusters can tell us about galaxy formation, of course. Pointer. I need a pointer. Can't talk without a pointer in my hand. Of course, one of the good reasons is that globular clusters are very old, amongst the oldest radiant objects in the universe, but also because they are associated with galaxies of all kinds. Even dwarf galaxies have globular clusters, which is interesting in itself. And in this picture of M87, virtually every blob you see is a globular cluster. And we've heard from Keith that globular clusters are good traces of the star formation histories of galaxies. Globular cluster formation appears to be intimately linked to star formation. We've heard about the fact that there are bimodal color distributions in luminous galaxies, and this tells us inevitably that there are subpopulations. Globular cluster systems are not as simple as we used to think, which makes them all the more interesting, in particular with respect to galaxy formation. So these color differences, a color difference like this, can be due to an age difference in the two subpopulations, or a metallicity difference, or some combination of the two. And that combination is very interesting and generally is still to be determined. But it does tell us that we have multiple epochs or mechanisms of formation in these systems. So a color difference, and this is a typical one, if you'd like to ascribe it solely to a metallicity difference, it amounts to about 1 dex in Fe over H. Keith's talked about the 4 to 5 formation models, so I don't need to go into them in any detail. I just wanted to emphasize that our model, the in-situ model, our early idea on this, or our ideas on this, were that the blue globular clusters formed in clumps in a very early phase. And both this, and they have to form with very few associated stars in this early phase. I'll come back to that, not problem, but fact, that blue globular clusters appear to be fundamentally different from red globular clusters in that they form with very few associated stars. This and this, the hierarchical merging semi-analytic model, which really encompasses elements of all of these, both in 2 and 4, you have to truncate globular cluster formation at very high redshifts, redshifts of about 5, in order to end up with a bimodal color distribution. So I just wanted to mention that. So as Keith said, you'd like to be able to measure all of these characteristics for the blue and the red subpopulations separately in order to get a handle on what are the dominant mechanisms. It's pretty clear that all of these mechanisms occur, but the question is, when did they occur and what are the dominant forces which forged a galaxy in the end? So just to concentrate on ages, to give you an example, that there are somewhat different expectations from the different models. In the merger model, you'd expect an old population, maybe the age of the universe less a giga-year or so, and then a young population, which should have the age of the merger. In the two-phase in situ idea, you'd expect 2 old populations, but one, the red population, should be a few, 2 to 4 giga-years younger than the other. In the accretion model, the blue and the red clusters should have about the same age, i.e. old. And the hierarchical merging formalism of Beasley et al. Actually makes a few more specific predictions, because it's a semi-analytic code here. They predict some age substructure in the red population, and that the red globular clusters in group and field ellipticals of low luminosity will be younger than those in bright cluster ellipticals. So we say, great, we've got some specific predictions here. Let's go for it. Let's measure the ages in these globular cluster systems. and all will be revealed. Trouble is, it can't be done very easily. What can we do at present? Well, the way we do it is we sweat for days at the Keck Observatory to get nice high signal-to-noise spectra, and we measure individual element strengths, indices, some indices being age-dependent, like the Balmerlines, and some indices being metallicity-dependent, like magnesium and iron and so forth. So we measure these on our integrated spectrum, and then we put the data points on a plane, an iron metallicity sensitive versus age sensitive plane, and compare to stellar evolutionary model predictions. So the grids here are the stellar evolutionary models, and this is just sort of by way of an example. We can do quite well, except if we're trying to measure ages of old objects with low metallicities, in which case we haven't got a clue. Because I want to point out here that the lines, the grid lines, actually cross at low metallicities and high ages. So we cannot distinguish relative ages in low metallicity systems. You can basically, all you can say is that something's about 10 giga years old or older. And we can't say any better than that. However, in general, with the kinds of signal-to-noise we can get with Keck in about 6 hours at the distance of Virgo, we can say in general that we can do 2 to 4 giga years at 12 giga years. And these are not absolute ages. I want to stress this. If you pick somebody else's models, you get a quite different absolute age. Fortunately, though, the relative ages, to first order at least, are okay within a given model. Yes?
Can you actually distinguish between a youngish globular cluster and an old globular cluster that has lots of blue horizontal branch stars in it?
Well, I've got down here, see this little fine print here, caveat, blue horizontal branches. There is a potential problem with contribution from blue horizontal branch stars, which up until recently hasn't really been addressed in the models. The modelers now are starting to look at this in some detail. And the upshot appears to be that, at least with metal-rich systems, you have to add in a huge amount of blue horizontal branch stars in order to perturb your age estimates. So it's definitely something that needs to be worried about. We don't understand the second parameter issues at all. And we don't understand, these issues are not terribly well modeled at present, but people are working on it. It's something to bear in mind and be concerned about.
And what about these
fragments? I don't think they produce enough of the blue light in the integrated stuff. Other things in the models, though, are a concern. The modelers have to produce the right luminosity functions on the red giant branch, and particularly the asymptotic giant branch stars. So there are some caveats, but it does seem, I mean, my overall take on this is that we can do relative ages quite well at the 2 to 4 giga year level at old ages, providing it's not a metal poor system. And for younger ages, I haven't shown the younger grids here, but as you get younger, the grid lines are more highly separated, so you can pinpoint ages even more accurately at very young ages. So the answer is we can be fairly confident about distinguishing a young object from an old object, but the fine detail is yet to come. So that's sort of the backdrop, and I just want to quickly run through some fairly recent results on extragalactic globular clusters to give you some examples of where we stand and what do we know. Well, if you take color magnitude diagrams for extragalactic globular cluster systems, they almost always turn out to be bimodal. The color distributions are always bimodal to high confidence levels. There's one glaring exception, which is this one shown here, which really does appear to be unimodal in the optical. I'm coming back to that. However, almost everywhere else you look, there are two pigs, a blue pig, which always comes in around this colour, and a red pig, which always comes in around this colour. Now, if you turn that into metallicity, that colour difference, it's minus 1.4 and minus 0.6, which turns out to be just the same as the peaks occurring in the Milky Way, M31, and it turns out also in the Sombrero. And this colour magnitude diagram and histogram come from some HST data of ours on Sombrero, also HST data that we analysed. And we went to the Keck Observatory and took spectra of a number of these objects, and we found out the vast majority of the globular clusters in this galaxy are old, 13 giga-years old. So both the red and the blue globular clusters in this galaxy appear to be old, and the colour difference is primarily due to a metallicity difference. Now, I want to mention this again. This is from some work, Larson et al., Søren Larson, and myself and collaborators, where we looked at the correlation of the properties of the red globular clusters and the blue globular clusters with parent galaxy properties. And here's this colour here is the globular cluster colour. So it's the colour of the peak of the distribution of the red globular clusters in galaxies and the blue globular clusters in galaxies and the parent galaxy absolute magnitude. And the interesting thing here is that both the blue and the red globular clusters correlate with parent galaxy luminosity. This relationship is now strengthened, the blue one, when you put on, and I haven't done that yet, when you put on the results from Jennifer Lotz's PhD thesis on dwarf galaxies, this relationship is strongly enforced, that the blue globular clusters in dwarfs are bluer than the blue globular clusters in ellipticals. Now, just to not digress, but to address the issue of spirals versus ellipticals, and this is from a paper with Duncan Forbes and Søren Larsen and myself, we looked at the globular clusters in spiral galaxies and noticed that there appeared to be a trend of increasing number of, or a decreasing number of metal-rich globular clusters with Hubble type, with evolving Hubble type. So here is an SA galaxy, it's the Sombrero galaxy, has a large number of red globular clusters. The open histogram is the total cluster sample, and the hatched histogram is the inner sample. So we have lots of red globular clusters in Sombrero, fewer in M31, fewer in the Milky Way, and none in M33. So M33 doesn't have a bulge, and it doesn't have any red globular clusters. And we thought, oh, well, that's interesting. Maybe that means there's some relationship here. That, in particular, that there is a relationship, a correlation, and that the metal-rich globular clusters in spirals are actually not disk objects, that they are bulge objects. That, of course, has been suggested previously. 5 minutes left. God, I haven't even got underway here. Number of bulge globular clusters scales with the bulge luminosity, such that the bulge specific frequency always comes out to be about one. It does in those three cases we looked at. The total specific frequency, it turns out, for a field ellipticals is between one and three. And about half of all globular clusters in ellipticals typically are red. So you get a bulge specific frequency for ellipticals. Ellipticals are all bulge. Of about one. So this number is the same for spirals, spiral bulges, and ellipticals. So they have the same number of metal-rich globular clusters per unit starlight. So, well, that's interesting. Let's pursue that idea a little bit further. The red globular cluster relation has a similar slope to the galaxy color relation. So this slope, which connects red globular cluster color with galaxy mass, this is now galaxy velocity dispersion, that relation, this line here, is the relation for galaxy. So galaxy color versus galaxy velocity dispersion. And this dots here are spiral galaxies, they fit the trend. So that suggests that the metal-rich globular clusters in spirals and in ellipticals may have the same origin, and that origin is the same as the bulge stars. So I want to mention that there's an increasing body of evidence that most of both the red and the blue globular clusters in galaxies are very old, greater than 10 giga-years old. But we generally find a small percentage of young globular clusters in these systems. So let me give you two examples and then I'll be quiet. One example is in NGC 3610, very interesting galaxy, intermediate age merger remnant from the tidal tails and fine structure and so forth, get an age of 4 giga-years. We have taken spectra of 8 globular clusters in this galaxy, two which are potentially old metal poor, blue colours, and 6 which were potentially young, being red and bright. This is some work done with my new graduate student, Jay Strader and Francois and others. And so we have some nice spectra. But the interesting thing is that there was something of a surprise here in that the majority of the candidate young globular clusters in this system were in fact old. So only one of them, one of the 6 candidates, turned out to be young. But it does indeed have the age of the merger. So it's consistent with globular clusters forming in the merger. However, the majority of the red globular clusters appear to be old. So there's the old metal poor, old metal rich, and a single young metal rich object. Now, to be fair, we haven't probed into the very central regions of this galaxy, or we had not. I just came from Keck, and when we were at Keck, we probed into within one effective radius inside the galaxy. So it'll be very interesting to see what proportion of red, young reds to old reds, ultimately turn up. The other interesting galaxy that I want to give you as an example is NGC 4365. I mentioned that this one is unimodal in the optical. Very unusual in that regard, perhaps unique. Unimodal, if you look in the infrared, and this is from some work by Thomas Putzi and collaborators, and Paul is one of those collaborators, and he'll talk about this in more detail. So I just want to mention that if you look in the infrared, there are a group of objects in the infrared which appear to be candidate young clusters on the grounds that their infrared colours are red for their optical colours. And Paul will talk about that in some detail. So those candidate young ones we observed at Keck Observatory, and you can see we got very nice spectra, and we find that indeed some of those candidate young clusters are indeed young, not all of them. So these are these age-sensitive versus metallicity-sensitive grids, and some of these objects here do appear to be young. This is young up here, and this is old down here, and this is solar metallicity here, and this is supersolar, and so on. So these objects appear to be solar metallicity, or a little less than solar, and young. So they are in fact young, 2 to 5 giga-years, and metal rich, rather than old and metal poor. See, if you just had the optical colours, you would have concluded that these things were old and metal poor. So in other words, there's a conspiracy. There's a conspiracy of age and metallicity which hides the young population in the optical peak. Now, an interesting problem here, that in itself is interesting, that there's a young population hiding in there. What's especially interesting is that this galaxy is said to have no no young stars. It's 14 giga-year-old galaxy according to the Sauron group. And we've calculated that you can't hide very many field stars of this age before you'd see them in the stellar integrated light. And estimates from the infrared are that there are about 25% of the globular clusters in the inner region have to be of intermediate age. And there's no way you can hide that number in the starlight. So the question is, where are the intermediate age stellar populations? So I will just give you my summary. If anybody wants to ask me what my opinion is on that last problem, I will be glad to give it. The color luminosity distributions of globular clusters in nearby galaxies shows us that two Gaussians are almost always preferred over a single Gaussian in the color distributions, and the peaks always come out of the same place, which I think suggests that we have multiple epochs and mechanisms of formation. That's pretty much universal. We looked at the correlations with parent galaxy properties, the correlation between globular cluster colors and host galaxy luminosity or mass and color for both the reds and the blues, I think is an important result. Both populations knew about the final galaxy, the size of the final galaxy to which they'd ultimately belong. In other words, and this is, I think, a very useful thing for globular clusters to do, the fragments in which the globular clusters formed at early times were already embedded in the dark halos of the final galaxy. If this is correct, this will be one of the few observational constraints on the properties of those pre-galactic clouds that combined to build the galaxies we see today. The similarities between the colours in spirals, of globular clusters in spirals and ellipticals, at least hints at some universal formation process. The slope of the red globular cluster versus galaxy mass relation is the same as the galaxy colour versus galaxy mass relation, so that suggests that there's a common chemical enrichment history, not just for both spirals and ellipticals, but for spirals and ellipticals and the host globular clusters in spirals and ellipticals, but also the host galaxy as well. There's an intimate relationship here between red globular cluster formation and the formation of the bulk of the galaxy. The old ages of both subpopulations is inconsistent with a late merger picture, but I think pretty much everyone agrees now that the mergers happened at high redshift. So galaxy assembly happened very early on, and the rest is just frosting. I want to leave you with the question. I think something very useful for discussion is, can globular clusters can form and appear to form in some instances with very little associated star formation? The blue globular clusters seem to have done that. So what's the connection there? Is there some biasing of the cluster mass function? Is that connected to the ambient star formation rate and so forth? But just to conclude, I'm done. Our data is best explained by a formation scenario in which both globular cluster subpopulations formed at early epochs within the potential well of the proto-galaxy in multiple episodes of star formation. Thank you.
Sorry. All right. Question.
Microphone over there.
I just wanted to ask, is my impression is that you almost always see two peaks in the color distribution.
Yes,
and,
always.
I know some people would like to associate these with merger events. So is it surprising that you never see three or other numbers of peaks, if that's the explanation?
That's a very good question. I unfortunately think it's too early to say that we don't see that kind of structure. I think we're just getting to the point, perhaps, where we can start to discern substructure. But I think it's very difficult to say conclusively whether it's there or not as yet. Generally speaking, we don't have large enough samples in a given galaxy. But it will be very revealing if we do start to see multiple populations.
Or not.
Yes.
Okay.
To respond to that, Mike, I think possibly one issue is that if you do have a roughly equal mass major merger, you're probably going to use up all the gas, and then the issue is if there's something else gassy that comes along and falls in, whether that's going to make new clusters. But I think in general, even in the merger picture, typically two peaks are going to be the norm.
Okay, Professor King.
There's one thing that's been bothering me listening to everything that's been said this morning. You have a red and a blue group, and it seems quite reasonable that the blue ones are metal poor and the red ones are metal rich. But then everyone seems to jump to the conclusion that this is a time sequence. And we have a counterexample in the Milky Way where the red bulge globular clusters have alpha enhancement, which shows that they're very old and that the enrichment takes place at a different rate in different parts of a galaxy. So I wonder how you can attach ages to colors just as easily as you attach metal abundances to colors.
Well, I think that the other thing I didn't talk about at all, and that's you've raised a very important issue, is the alpha to iron abundances. And we are, I could have given a little talk on alpha enhancement. And it is a very interesting and revealing question. And we are beginning to show, I think, that the globular clusters, the red globular clusters in ellipticals are alpha enhanced, as they are in galaxies in general. It depends on the scenario. I mean, the alpha enhancement issue is a problem, I think, for late mergers. It doesn't work. It's not much of a problem for the scenarios in which everything happened very early on. You do have to have the red one slightly younger only in order to get the ambient metallicity high.
I think the only way you can get around this is to have material that is retained in gaseous form so that no star formation takes place at all for the first few giga-years.
Right.
And then you start.
But so that works well in the in situ picture because you blow out the gas for a while and then you have a delay while it falls back in. Then you form the red globular clusters and the bulk of the galaxy stars. So I think the alpha issue works best in the multi-phase in situ idea. But as Keith said, we have to wave our hands in order to get that gas to go out there and then come back again.
On this issue, alpha enhancement, I thought, is mostly a sign of fast star formation, in the sense that the enhancement is done by supernovae 2 rather than 1. So that can also be done at later times.
But then you've got an ambient iron level which is very high. To get it to be so supersolar at late epochs is
right.
Very high.
Yeah, I mean late in the sense, I'm not talking about like 10 giga-years later. I mean, if the gas is not very much enhanced yet, you can still, you can still form alpha enhanced population.
Yeah.
I think now that data in a lot of different ways is getting better out other fields about galaxy formation, we have to be careful what we mean when we say early and keep reminding people that our tools are pretty blunt and it best limited by the accuracy with which you can determine ages in the galactic globular cluster systems. That's how everything's calibrated. Then, of course, it's worse. So your 2 to 4 giga-years is actually pretty much in redshift now compared to what people talk to. It encompasses redshift 5, redshift 2, and if you go to an extragalactic conference, redshift 2 is no longer high. So I think we have to be careful that we know it's not, most of the action hasn't happened since redshift 1, but then our age range starts encompassing a lot of Z range that people find interesting.
That's true. I mean, just to mention that the Beasley et al. Formalism does say that it has to be at redshift of 5 or greater.
That's just the metal poor ones.
The metal poor ones.
The metal rich ones form all the way
over a longer period, absolutely.
And I also wondered about Harvey's question about blue horizontal branch stars in the spectra. The opto-infrared technique probes a completely different part of the spectrum.
That's
so
a
the
point.
Fact that there's at least rough consistency suggests that that's not the issues. And the the optical to infrared technique, because you can get a lot more clusters, is sort of suggesting that, at the very least, maybe Paul showed a little bit of this, that frosting, that there is a spread of aging metallicity. So it's really the optical to infrared data that might end up answering Mike's question about multiple peaks, or at least starting to resolve out some of the metallicity peak that we in the optical is all just one big mush.
Yep, absolutely. That's really an important way to go.
All right, unfortunately, we have to move on. Next call.